Chapter 26. The U.S. Air flight left Memphis at 6:40 in the morning, which meant Ray had to leave Clanton no later than 5, which meant he slept about 3 hours, the usual at Maple Run. On the first flight, he dozed off en route, again in the Pittsburgh airport, and again on the commuter flight to Charlottesville. He inspected his apartment, then fell asleep on the sofa. The money hadn't been touched. No unauthorized entries into any of his little storage units at Cheney's. Nothing was out of the ordinary. He locked himself inside 18R, opened the 5 fireproof and waterproof boxes, and counted 53 freezer bags. Sitting on the concrete floor with $3 million strewn around him, Ray Attlee finally admitted how important the money had become. The real horror of last night had been the chance of losing it. Now he was afraid to leave it. In the past few weeks, he had become more curious about how much things cost, about what the money could buy, about how it could grow if invested conservatively or aggressively. At times, he thought of himself as wealthy, and then he would dismiss those thoughts. But they were always there, just under the surface, and popping up with greater frequency. The questions were slowly being answered. No, it was not counterfeit. No, it was not traceable. No, it had not been won at the casinos. No, it had not been filched from the lawyers and litigants of the 25th Chancery District. And no, the money should not be shared with Forrest, because he would kill himself with it. No, it should not be included in the estate for several excellent reasons. One by one, the options were being eliminated. He might be forced to keep it himself. There was a loud knock on the metal door, and he almost screamed. He scrambled to his feet and yelled, "Who is it?" "Security," came the reply, and the voice was vaguely familiar. Ray stepped over the cash and reached for the door, which he cracked no more than 4 inches. Mr. Murray was grinning at him. "Everything okay in there?" he asked, more of a janitor than an armed guard. "Fine, thanks," Ray said, his heart still frozen. "Need anything, let me know." "Thanks for last night."
"Just doing my job."
Ray repacked the money, relocked the doors, and drove across town with one eye on the rearview mirror. The owner of his apartment sent a crew of Mexican carpenters around to repair the 2 damaged doors. They hammered and sawed throughout the late afternoon, then said yes to a cold beer when they were finished. Ray chatted with them as he tried to ease them out of his den. There was a pile of mail on the kitchen table, and after ignoring it for most of the day, he sat down to deal with it. Bills had to be paid, catalogs and junk mail, 3 notes of sympathy. A letter from the Internal Revenue Service, addressed to Mr. Ray Attlee, executor of the estate of Reuben V. Attlee, and postmarked in Atlanta 2 days earlier. He studied it carefully before opening it slowly. A single sheet of official stationery from one Martin Gage, Office of Criminal Investigations, in the Atlanta office. It read, "Dear Mr. Attlee, as executor of your father's estate, you are required by law to include all assets for valuation and taxation purposes. Concealment of assets may constitute tax fraud. The unauthorized disbursement of assets is a violation of the laws of Mississippi and possible federal laws as well. Martin Gage, Criminal Investigator." His first instinct was to call Harry Rex to see what notice had been given to the IRS. As executor, he had a year from the date of death to file the final return, and according to the accountant, extensions were liberally granted. The letter was postmarked the day after he and Harry Rex went to court to open the estate. Why would the IRS be so quick to respond? How would they even know about the death of Reuben Attlee? Instead, he called the office number on the letterhead. The recorded message welcomed him to the world of the IRS Atlanta office, but he would have to call back later because it was a Saturday. He went online and in the Atlanta directory found 3 Martin Gages. The first one he called was out of town, but his wife said he did not work for the IRS, thank heavens. The second call went unanswered. The third found a Mr. Gage eating dinner.